we're in the last week of our series entitled Retell, passing on the unique stories of Luke from the life of Jesus. And today's story is the story of the road to Emmaus. Now, when I was a little girl, I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house. And they had like a plush velour, orange rust-colored sofa, love seat, chair set. You know, the kind that's like really fluffy with the buttons in it. And I spent a lot of time laying on that couch, you know, draped over the arm, on the back of the sofa, which I got in trouble for. And I spent a lot of time looking at this picture because it hung over the sofa. It was entitled, or is entitled, The Road to Emmaus. And it's by a relatively unknown German painter in the 19th century. He loved to paint these pastoral scenes sort of in contrast to the Industrial Revolution that was happening all around him. It was dirty and dusty, etc. And this picture depicts the story that we're going to talk about today. It's a story about what happens after Easter Sunday, about what happens after the resurrection. It's a story about what happens in the liminal space after the bad thing happens and we're still waiting for the next thing to come. It's so peaceful looking, isn't it? It's almost dreamlike. The road is smooth, the path is wide and inviting, it's nice and shaded so you don't get hot in the sun. It makes me want to walk this road to Emmaus along with them. Now, it made sense to me when I was a little kid that this is what the road to Emmaus might look like, because the bad thing has happened, right? Jesus has died, but he's been resurrected, he's overcome the grave, and everything is okay, and it's all fixed. But in actuality, that's not the message that the story of the road to Emmaus tells us. It's not a story full of the lightness and joy that we might expect after resurrection. This story reveals the ways that the resurrection actually works its way out in the world. And it seems that things did not magically change the moment that Jesus rose from the dead. This is how last week's passage ended. You might remember if you were here for Easter Sunday. The women go to the tomb, they find it empty, and then these shining angels appear and they're terrified. And the angels say to them, "Why are you looking for the living among the dead?" And so the women kind of gather themselves up, you know, get themselves up off the ground, and they go back to where the disciples are gathered and they tell them about all that they had witnessed. And this is what it says. "But the words of the women seemed to the disciples an idle tale, and they did not believe them." Peter alone goes back to the tomb to see if what the women have told them is true, and nobody else moves. It is not an auspicious start. The news of the resurrection does not automatically resurrect the hope of the disciples. They don't believe. They're confused, and they don't understand what's going on. And the story of the road to Emmaus reveals this too. Listen to this story. "That same day, two of Jesus' followers were walking to the village of Emmaus, 7 miles away from Jerusalem. As they walked along, they were talking about everything that had happened. And as they talked and discussed these things, Jesus himself suddenly came and began to walk with them. But God kept the followers from recognizing him. And Jesus asked them, 'What are you discussing so intently as you walk along?' And they stopped short, sadness written across their faces. And one of them, Cleopas, replied, 'You must be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the things that have happened there the last few days.' 'What things?' Jesus asked. 'The things that happened to Jesus, the man from Nazareth,' they said. 'He was a prophet and he did powerful miracles. He was a mighty teacher in the eyes of God and all the people. But our leading priests and other religious leaders handed him over to be condemned to death, and they crucified him We had hoped that he was the Messiah. We had hoped he was the one who had come to rescue Israel. This all happened 3 days ago, and then some women from our group of his followers were at the tomb early this morning, and they came back with this amazing report. They said his body was missing, and they had seen angels who told them that Jesus is alive. Some of our men ran out to see, and sure enough, his body is gone, just as the women had said. And then Jesus said to them, "You foolish people, you find it so hard to believe all that the prophets wrote in the scriptures. Wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory?" And then Jesus took them through the writings of Moses and all the prophets, explaining from all the scriptures the things concerning himself. By this time, they were nearing Emmaus and at the end of their journey. And Jesus acted as if he were going to go on, but they begged him, "Stay the night with us since it is getting late." And so he went home with them. And as they sat down to eat, he took the bread and he blessed it. And then he broke it and gave it to them. And suddenly their eyes were opened and they recognized him. And at that moment, he disappeared. There are so many amazing details in this story. Jesus just nonchalantly showing up, "Hey, what are you talking about? What story? I'm not sure what you're talking about," as if he doesn't know. And then Cleopas and his companion, like they do the stop short, to just look at him like he is crazy, like how can he not know? It's just a fabulous story. But I want to talk about one detail as we begin. These two were on their road to Emmaus, 7 miles away from Jerusalem. These two are getting out of Dodge. You see, for the last few chapters in the book of Luke, the narrative, the journey, has been taking us toward Jerusalem, toward the center of Jewish faith and hope, toward the temple, the representation of where God's presence dwelt. You see, Jesus was headed for the place where the Jewish people believed that the promises of God to rescue his people would take place, where he would restore his people, where God would defeat the enemies of the Jewish people at this time, the nation of Rome, and they would begin to enjoy their place as God's rightful people. Jesus was headed toward Jerusalem and victory. They believed that Jesus was the one who was going to rescue them. And instead, he ended up nailed to a cross. Instead of being the place where their hopes were fulfilled, Jerusalem becomes the place where their hopes have died. We had hoped he was the Messiah. We had hoped that he would rescue us. Hope is behind them, and these followers of Jesus are headed in the opposite direction. This passage also says that this happens on that same day. It means the same day that the women went to the tomb and found it empty. This would have been the day after Sabbath. So Sabbath would have been celebrated on Saturday in this time. And so while this day is actually a Sunday, the day that they're walking the road to Emmaus, it's basically equivalent to our Monday. Monday is the day of the week when everything goes back to normal, right? You get a case of the Mondays. It's a day that when whatever happened on the weekend is over and done and the world resets. It's the day when you realize that no matter what happened on this fabulous or terrible weekend, the world goes on and maybe none of what has happened to you matters at all. So you might get the picture here. Their walk to Emmaus was not a stroll of life and hope, unlike that lovely German painting. It wasn't an inviting stroll. It was the walk no one wants to make. It was the walk of losers, the hopeless, the beat down, and the discouraged. It was the walk of the heartbroken and the worn out. We've all had those Monday morning experiences, haven't we? The day after. The day after when we have lost hope and the world has the audacity to keep carrying on as it did before. The day that we realize that although our world has ended, the earth is just going to keep spinning on its axis. The day after the news, after the funeral, after the wedding, after the diagnosis. And we have all had that experience of walking the road to Emmaus, which isn't so much a walk to somewhere as a walk away from something. It's the road that we walk to escape the broken heart or the hopeless situation. It's the road we walk to get as far away from the thing that we'd hoped for as we can. Sometimes the road to Emmaus is even a walk away from faith as we knew it. It's a walk away from the ways we used to think or believe, or even the institutions or the temples that we put our faith in. It's easy to think that because we worship a resurrected Jesus, that that means there are no longer any Mondays, there are no longer any walks on the Emmaus Road. But that's one of the beautiful things about this story. It reminds us that it is in these things, in these ordinary, heartbreaking, disappointing circumstances of life, that the resurrected Jesus walks alongside of us. And when Jesus shows up in this story, in this lovely twist of irony and humor, but also compassion, he doesn't just dive in and try to change things for the followers. He says to them, "What things? What things?" He gives them room to tell the story of their disappointment and their grief, their Monday story, their story of loss of hope. Jesus doesn't skip over it. He doesn't shush them. He doesn't rescue them or offer them platitudes. He simply listens. Jesus shows up in the middle of this journey away from hope, and in his listening, he begins to transform the story of these followers, the story that these followers are telling themselves. So a few years ago, my little brother, I should say younger brother, he's not littler than me anymore, he got married and he asked that I would officiate. He and his wife asked me to officiate the wedding, which I was delighted to do. At this time, though, my dad was also starting to decline in his health, and he had a really significant back issues. He was starting to lose his ability to walk, and he had some really difficult times just doing regular life. So anyway, what happened was he ended up missing the wedding because he had to have emergency back surgery, which was heartbreaking for all of us. But it also meant that part of that wedding weekend, I spent taking him to see the specialist. So I took him to an appointment and we filled the specialist in on what was happening that weekend, that Chris was getting married and that Dad really wanted to be there if he could. And then my dad also told him this detail. He said, "And my daughter, Allison here, is marrying him." And the doctor responded, "Is she allowed to do that?" And you guys, for years and years and years, I thought that that doctor was making a dig at me because I was a woman with the ability and agency to perform a wedding ceremony. I thought he was being a jerk. Probably most of you realize that he wasn't. He was just making a joke about how sisters should not marry brothers. But it wasn't until a few months ago, when I was telling this story to somebody else, that I clearly saw what the doctor had meant, and that I had misinterpreted it all of these years, putting my own spin on it, reading my own issues into it. I had one bit wrong, and it changed my whole interpretation of the interaction. Sometimes our stories take on a certain shape, a certain interpretation that isn't true. that hinders us, that doesn't serve us, that helps us not to be aware of reality. And it's in wrestling with it, in telling our stories, and in offering them to one another that sometimes we can see them in a different light. Sometimes we need our stories retold to us. Sometimes we need an outside perspective to see what's really going on. And this is what Jesus does for these disciples on the road to Emmaus. After they tell him the way that they've interpreted scripture and hoped things would turn out, Jesus reframes and reinterprets the story for them. And Jesus said to them, "You foolish people, you find it so hard to believe all the prophets wrote in the scriptures. Wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory?" And then Jesus took them through all the writings of Moses and all of the prophets, explaining from the scriptures the things concerning him. Now, one of the things that these guys got really wrong about the Messiah was that the Messiah and suffering did not go together. There was no room in their story for the crucifixion of the one in whom they had hoped. They didn't understand that the Messiah would not be saved from suffering, but that the Messiah would save through suffering. They had that bit wrong, and it changed the meaning of everything that they saw and experienced. It changed it so much that they didn't even recognize Jesus on the road with them. Ronald Rollheiser says this: "What the resurrection teaches is that God doesn't forcibly intervene to stop pain and death. Instead, he redeems the pain and vindicates the death." And Barbara Brown Taylor says this: "The Christ is not the one who wins the power struggle. He is the one who loses it." Or maybe more accurately, what looks like losing was actually winning. You see, Jesus does not get rescued. Jesus gets resurrected. Suffering was always part of the plan, and understanding this changed the way the disciples interpreted the whole story of what God was up to in the world. I wonder what might need to be reinterpreted in our lives or in our world, where we might be getting it wrong. What perspective might we be missing that keeps things from clicking into place? What detail might we be missing or getting wrong? What interpretation of the events might keep us from seeing what is true? One thing that the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus reveals about the lives of followers of Jesus is that God does not rescue us from suffering. God redeems the suffering. Things fall apart. Hopes die. We all have experiences of walking the road to Emmaus, and we, like Cleopas, that disciple of Jesus, often can only see things through the lens of our disappointment. We had hoped. We had hoped it would be different. We had hoped we would be rescued, but that didn't happen, and now there is no hope. But Jesus can reframe these stories. And how do we let Jesus do this? Because when we can't see what we can't see it. Do you get my drift? Like, until someone reframed that interaction with the doctor, I couldn't conceive that he could have meant anything other than what I thought he meant. Well, there's no formula for these things, but there are ways that this story sort of invites us to reframe or reimagine our disillusionment and our disappointment. Number one, tell your story. Tell your story in the right community. It says in this passage that as these followers walked along, they discussed these things. But the word used for discussed here is inquired, examined. They were wrestling with this story, trying to put the pieces together. They were trying to make sense of it. And when Jesus shows up, he gives them space to tell their story. Telling our stories is a way that we integrate them, that we make sense of them, that we make meaning out of them. Secondly, don't just tell your story to a community. Tell your story to Jesus in prayer. And then take time to listen, to hear what Jesus might be saying back to you about your story and your interpretation of it. It was only in telling the story of that interaction with the doctor that I began to see that conversation differently. And that has happened so many times for me in my life in other ways. When I've told my whole sad tale to a friend or a counselor or even to Jesus, and they've absorbed it all, they've heard it all, and then they reframe it completely for me. Oh, I see God there. I think you got that part wrong. I think there is still hope. It's maybe just in a different place than where you're looking. Finally, this story reminds us to find new perspective by looking at the story of God as told in the scriptures. And by this, I don't mean that we go to our index and look up, you know, like difficult parenting, you know, what do they call it? Highly spirited child. And then we like go and find the solution in our Bible on page 52. But rather that we reorient our lives, our actions, and our hearts to a God who tells the story that he works through suffering, through pain, and through death to bring redemption. We learn how to live well in disappointment. We learn to trust when things feel hopeless. We learn how to imagine new life and new hope when all we can see is death. The scriptures help us wait well because they remind us that we are living in the middle of a story and the story is not over. And one thing that we've done as a community through this time of transition is that we've leaned into the Christian calendar. And that's a way that we root ourselves in our founding story, our defining story as told in the scriptures, while we discern what's next for our particular community. So we've celebrated Advent, and we just got through Lent, including Ash Wednesday. We celebrated Palm Sunday, Good Friday, and Easter Sunday. Advent lasted 4 weeks. Lent lasted 6 weeks. It was 6 weeks of fasting and preparation. And now we're in the season of Easter. Do you know how long Easter lasts? Does anyone know? 70 days. Easter season is 70 days. There are 6 Sundays following Easter Sunday that belong to Easter in the liturgical calendar. It lasts until Ascension Day, which happens on May 26th. In the scriptures, the days of Easter before Jesus ascended, the days between Jesus' resurrection and his ascension, when he went up into the clouds, when he returned to the Father, were marked by appearances to his disciples. He just kept showing up. He was walking through walls to meet them as they were in locked rooms. He showed up at beach fires and in gardens and to doubting disciples and here on the road to Emmaus. And in most of these stories of Jesus' appearances, the people to whom he appeared had a hard time recognizing him. In this story, it says that they were kept from recognizing Jesus, and that it is only when they welcome him into their home and he takes the bread and he breaks it that they see Jesus for who he really is. It's just for one split second, and then he disappears. The irony of this story, which has been obvious to us all along as the readers, now becomes clear to them. They have been telling Jesus the whole time about his death and disappearance. The one whose loss has made them feel hopeless has been the one they've been telling the story to all along. And his presence is revealed in brokenness. Do you see the beautiful irony that penetrates this story? It's kind of hilarious and it's also heart-wrenching. Jesus had to die for the power of God in the resurrection to be revealed. The hopes of the disciples had to die so that there was room for them to see what God was really up to, not rescuing them from suffering, but redeeming them through suffering. And it was through his broken body that the resurrected Jesus could be revealed in this moment, in this time, and in this way. And then Jesus just kept showing up to the disciples in their everyday, ordinary spaces, just surprising them with his presence. He never approached people from on high, but always in the midst. In the midst of people, in the midst of real life, with the questions that real life asks. The sacred moments, the moments of miracle, are often the everyday moments. The moments which, if we do not look with more than our eyes or listen with more than our ears, reveal only a gardener, a stranger coming down the road behind us, or a meal like any other meal. So how do we recognize Jesus? Well, this week I heard a story about resilience training for the American military. And this resilience training teaches people, invites members of the military, in the midst of their often stressful and disillusioning work, to hunt for the good in the middle of the difficult, to really pay attention to what good things might be happening. It's called Hunt the Good Stuff, and it even has a hashtag, hashtag HTGS. You can look it up. And this is what I read about it this week. The second half of the class, another ATEC Master Resilience Trainer, Master Sergeant Sheila Sango, discussed the resiliency skill of hunting the good stuff. According to CSF2, hunting the good stuff counteracts the negativity bias to create positive emotion and to notice and analyze what is good. When you hunt the good stuff, it leads to better health, better sleep, feeling calm, better relationships, and greater life satisfaction, said Sango. And I wonder if over these 70 days of Easter, like a little bit like an Easter egg hunt, we could do our own version of hunting the good stuff. This time of year when we're invited for 70 days to hunt Jesus, to notice Jesus showing up, surprising us with his new life. I wonder if hunting for the good stuff might be a way not to like paper over the difficulties of our lives, but allow God or participate with God to help open our eyes to the ways that Jesus is already present to us, has always been there, even on those long Monday walks to Emmaus. So this week, this sermon had to be written a little more quickly than usual because Jared was scheduled actually to preach and then he got sick, so I had to step in and pinch hit. And so it was an intense couple of days, and on Friday afternoon, I'd had about enough of this story, of my desk, you know, when your own home just feels like claustrophobic. And I flopped down on my couch, not a velour rust-colored couch this time, but my modern sectional. And I threw my hands over my face, and I did this, and did a big sigh. And then I looked over my couch at the artwork that I have there, and I saw this. Now, I've had this print for a long time, hanging over my couch, but for the first time this week, I saw that it's the road to Emmaus, isn't it? It's two friends on a path together, and their hearts are bleeding, they're broken, but they're not alone. Their story, their journey, their path is held in the hands of Jesus, the suffering hands of Jesus. And all of them are drawn together in love. I loved that painting over the couch at my grandparents', but I think I like this one more. Jesus just showed up, surprise, for me, in the ordinary, in the everyday. Hashtag HTGS, right? This Easter season, these 70 days, Let's look for the ways that Jesus is revealing himself in the midst of our lives, in the midst of maybe the sad and broken, in the middle of the ordinary and everyday. Let's allow our eyes to be opened, our hearts to be broken, and our lives to be a place where we host the presence of Jesus wherever and however he chooses to reveal himself.